Welcome to this week's episode of the CPG View, the number one CPG information source for global omnichannel leaders.
Awesome. Well, Marlo, thank you so much for joining this week's episode of the CPG View. You know, our mission is to be the number one CPG information source for global omnichannel leaders, and couldn't think of a better leader to have on than you. Before we get started and go through our list here, would you mind introducing yourself and the company you're with?
Yeah, for sure. And thanks for having me on, Don. I'm excited to talk, and I've heard just so many great things from a lot of the other folks that have come on. So it's cool to be here talking with you now. As far as my background, you know, I'm out of Austin, Texas, was born in Dallas originally. I've kind of had a wide range of things that I've done, but probably the biggest one is software development. And that's what led to this business. And so we've really built a full stack in-store retail media platform and primarily focused on the grocery market. We're the largest in-store retail media network in the U.S. today with over 4,000 stores and partner with retailers all across the country in all 50 states. And work with every kind of advertiser you could think of, from the CPG brands that are obvious that are sold in store to a lot of non-endemics as well. Like, some of our biggest partners are actually on the financial side, like Chase Bank and a lot of others like them. So yeah, really excited to talk about just kind of where the industry's headed. I think that, you know, 2024 is going to be an exciting year for in-store as retail media kind of leans into that next big growth phase. So
awesome. You know, just thinking about this, you know, I was looking back at your background and it looks like you've studied physics and, to your point, you know, software development. Now you're the CEO of Grocery TV. It does seem a bit unique. I guess, how has those experiences influenced your leadership style and how you think about, you know, strategy with regards to Grocery TV?
Yeah, I mean, I've studied a few different things and they each kind of give me a little bit. I think the stereotype you hear, especially from folks like Elon Musk, who also studied physics, is the idea of base principles and being able to kind of go back to, you know, what's the fundamental question you're trying to answer. And I think that sort of stuff's really helpful. You know, what are the laws of physics that constrain this problem we're trying to solve? There's also things too, though, like dimensional analysis. That's pretty fun. Like looking at a problem and kind of breaking it into its units and saying, you know, what goes into this? What are the inputs? What are the outputs? And that's something that's pretty universal in business. You know, and I actually went into it just because I was pretty bad at math coming out of high school. And I wanted to basically know that when I graduated, I would be able to encounter any problem in the business world and not be intimidated by it. So that was actually the original motivation. But it is a fun subject and one that, you know, occasionally draw on.
Yeah. That's interesting. Yeah, to be bad at math and then studying physics. That's interesting. I think about, and I know we're going to get into it here, and we've talked about this on the podcast several times in the last, I want to say, probably 3 to 6 months, but how large retail media has become in the U.S. And I think the last stat I saw from our friend Andrew and the team at eMarketer was maybe 45 or $50 billion going to, I think, north of 100, 125 billion in the next, you know, 3 to 4 years. Exact numbers, you know, kind of withstanding, is like massive, just massive rocket ship. And, you know, I think it's interesting. It'll be really interesting to get your perspective as we kind of go throughout our time together here. You know, I wanted to ask you, you know, Grocery TV has seen significant growth by focusing on in-store media, which I think is really interesting. I really want to get your perspective on, you know, can you elaborate on how this focus has driven your success and what strategies you have planned in the future for the platform?
Yeah, I mean, you talked about just the macro picture of retail media and how explosive the growth has been. Most of that's been driven by Amazon, right? And then some of the other retailers like Walmart following suit and Instacart. And it's really all happening online right now. And so we really see, like, the next phase of it to get to that 100 billion that you're talking about is going to have to happen in the physical environment. Like, you're going to start kind of tapping out the e-commerce audience. And I think you've heard Andrew write about this and speak about the fact that the in-store audience is much bigger than the audience online. There's a lot of people that are not going onto a retailer's e-com app or website, but they are going to be in the store every week. And so reaching that audience, we think, is the really next big exciting thing. But it's also one that's a lot harder to do. You know, you've got to build physical infrastructure. It's not code you can drop into a website. And, you know, somebody's got to do that. Somebody's got to take on that CapEx. Somebody's got to have the operations to support it. And you got to make decisions about where you put the displays. And there's just a lot of really challenging stuff involved, especially from a customer experience standpoint. And so, yeah, to your original question, you know, when we started out, we said, let's pick like one part of the store and just do that really well. And for us, that was checkout and kind of in the front end area of the store. And since then, we've really expanded to being a full store platform, but we've been very, very cautious about how we do it. You know, each store area is its own unique breed. And like, you got to think about how the shopper is in that situation, what kind of mindset they're in, what kind of content's relevant to that part of the store. So if it's entrance, it's going to be different than the exit. If it's the pharmacy, that's different than the deli. Like, they all have different use cases and mindsets that you want to cater to. And even just the screen itself, like how you would set that up is going to vary. So yeah, it's a tough space, but it's also one that we're really excited about because we think it just has such an incredible audience to reach.
Yeah. Double clicking on that a little bit. You know, we think about this, we take North America for a moment, the total, you know, digital e-commerce penetration rate of the totals, you know, between 15 to 20%, depending on who you talk to. Let's just say 20% for a moment. So that leaves 80% that is, you know, really transacting in a brick and mortar environment. And then even more specifically, if we take food and bev, that category, the pen rate is really low. It's like below 10, I believe the last stat I saw. Maybe it's 8 or so, somewhere in that range. So to your point, it even further accentuates the need for that type of media placement in a store. So I couldn't agree with you more. And I think it's also fascinating. I think we had a guest on a few months ago, and they were talking about, you know, does it pass the test of, do you understand how a 10-year-old shops? And I remember we were having a conversation. I was like, what do you mean how a 10-year-old shops? He's like, can you actually just explain in 4 steps how a 10-year-old shops? And he was talking about in a store, because people do go in stores, a lot of people, right? Yeah. And it was interesting because like from phone to like aisle, and then like you need that type of interest in the aisle that you have on that. If you and I or those consumers are purchasing on our phone, you need that type of engagement in the store. And I just thought that was, really interesting.
Yeah. And I mean, I think it's a space that has a lot of unique advantages that you don't have as much of online or aren't as differentiated. We did some analysis recently and put out a report around just how engaging different ad mediums are, and also how receptive are people to them, like how willing are they to actually look at them? You know, does it tick them off to see it or not? And you can imagine in your head, like the ones that really piss you off, right? Like you're going and you're trying to watch a video, and then, you know, pop up video ad comes in front of it, and you have to watch that before you can watch the thing you actually wanted to see. And so any of these kind of categories that are more in the entertainment type, where you're not really in a buying mindset, we found in our research that people tend to say that they don't like that, which is kind of obvious from personal experience, but you see that in the data. On the flip side, we have stuff that's more transactional, more commerce focused in the retail environment like us. Those perform really, really well. Like people are actually very open to marketing because they're there to shop. Like that's the mindset they're in. They're not trying to be entertained. They're there to make purchases. And so they want to be better informed. They want to learn new things. Especially for grocery, people will tell you like one of the biggest reasons they go is the discoverability. Like it's actually kind of fun to wander around and see the new things that are coming out and like what they could try at home. And yeah, I mean, you know, it's just it's a space that we think is really, really interesting and hasn't been able to be fully tapped into yet because it hasn't been wired up to the internet. So
yeah, great points. You know, you mentioned earlier in our conversation the importance of place-based retail media for advertisers and how each area of the store is really a different animal in and of itself. Yep. Especially in the grocery context, how do you see the trend evolving, and what impact do you think that'll have on retail and the advertising industries?
Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest one is we're just trying to figure out where we live from a budget standpoint, right? Because if I talk to a CPG brand today, yeah, any of them will say that what we're doing is obvious. But then when you ask them where the money is going to come from, that's where things get kind of confusing. Because when you're within the four walls of the store, oftentimes they say, well, that's shopper. But the thing is like there's already great tactics for shopper marketing to do that bottom of funnel activation. And what we're doing is something that's a bit different. It's more full funnel. It's more about education and awareness. And it's more of the kind of stuff you're doing online today or you're doing on TV. And so, you know, we're still just trying to even define what the category is. A lot of the money today is coming out of digital at home because they're used to buying, you know, signage in a physical space outside of the home environment. But even for digital out of home, you know, most of what you think of for that is large format. You're thinking of billboards, you're thinking of Times Square, you're not thinking of a 32-inch display in a retail environment. And so I think, you know, and a lot of the stuff that we're seeing written about today is that like in-store retail media is kind of its own animal that's coming up. And I actually think the closest analog is stuff like linear TV, where, you know, it's got this broad reach, you know, mass market, you know, all the kind of people that are harder to reach, you know, that's really what we are able to provide that audience with the frequency that is hard to find elsewhere, right? Because you got to go buy your groceries every week. But it's tricky, you know, because again, this is such a new thing. And, you know, people need to know where it's going to come from when you're going to ask for demand.
Yeah, that's interesting. I was having a conversation with a group a week or two ago. We were talking just about this of, hey, retail media, where does it come from in your budget? Does it come from the shopper team, which to your point, does it come from the brand marketing team, which typically controls the national media dollars? Does it come from the e-commerce team, where in some of my past roles and past lives, the e-commerce team actually managed all of retail media? I think that's actually an interesting point, because I could see many areas where it could live, because to your point, it's not as much, or I wouldn't think it would be as much bottom funnel, like, I'm not trying to broad brushstroke this one, but like Corgate in store, like really compelling Corgate, like shopper dollars typically go to things like that. When you walk into a grocery store and you get this huge like Doritos, you know, display or Pepsi or Coke, whatever, I could totally see it being a different, I could imagine the conversations when you left, as a, for instance, where everyone's around the table saying, okay, this is great. Who's going to pay for it? We agree it's a great concept, and but yeah, where do the dollars come from?
Yeah, and I think that's all going to depend on the tactic. So when we talk to brands, especially, we say like, what are you trying to accomplish? You know, if you want to drive conversion, right? Like if you've got a promo that you're trying to push out and you want to boost that on our network, like great, go do that. But a lot of times when our network's being used, it's being used to build awareness, to educate consumers, like to really increase kind of visibility and more of those kind of brand activations at the national level. And so for those, yeah, that's going to be a different budget. And that, you know, I don't think there's like a clear answer to that question yet, but what we're telling a lot of folks is, if you look at your linear TV spend, right, you care about reach, you care about frequency, you care about reaching a mass audience, doing it in contextually relevant ways, and really trying to build awareness with them, right? But that's a space where it's declining, you know, it's half of what it used to be in terms of reach. And yet we're still spending a lot of the same dollars we used to. And so the cost of that is going up. And so then as a result, your performance is going down. And so we're saying, look, as you start to see that roll over and those budgets have to go somewhere, consider spaces like ours, because this is a really incredible way to reach Americans. You know, and CTV's got a place for this, obviously, too, that's been huge. But it's starting, I think, hit its limits on like how much supply is there. And so you're seeing CPMs get higher and higher because of that. So
yeah, sure. You also have such an engaged consumer. Again, just speaking from personal experience, you're in the store, you really are engaged in a way that is different than in other areas of when maybe you engage with the consumer, how in tune that consumer is when they're in the store is unique. And I could certainly see the value of your product and the concept. It makes total sense to me. You know, I want to mention something. You've highlighted it, I think, a piece you wrote, or you were featured in an article that I read a few weeks ago. And you highlighted some standout media campaigns. I think I saw Lando Lakes cheese was a point you called out. What do you think makes a place-based media campaign effective and memorable? And how does grocery TV contribute to creating such impactful campaigns?
Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest thing on this is you need to be contextually relevant. You need to engage the shopper, right? It's all the same kind of stuff that you would do for any creative. And to do that well with our format, you need to think about that place and that time that you're reaching them. And so if it's, for example, in the checkout aisle where people are standing in line, you know, we've seen ads like a deodorant brand that said, hey, while you're waiting in line, you know, do 10 calf raises, you know, and it's going to get you a little bit of quick fitness in the middle of your day, you know. And it's pretty funny because then you're standing in line, you see people doing these calf raises, like, what the hell are they doing? And then eventually you see the ad, like, okay, you know.
Right.
So that stuff can be kind of fun, and it's effective. Like, we know it from the data that we've run our own studies where we look at, like, are people looking at the screens and to what extent are they, and how does that vary by creative? We know that when creatives have these kinds of messages that speak to that environment, that space, that time, that the engagement scores are way, way higher. There's dumb things you can do too, though, like, you know, show the product itself. It's amazing how many ads don't show the product until the very end. Like, you got to have that in there, and it's got to be, especially if it's CPG brand, like, it's got to be something that evokes, like, the sounds, the flavors, the tastes, like, all the kinds of things that you would think about when you see it. And actually, you know, having copy on there, like, we don't do sound. We're big believers that if you have in a physical environment sound, you're going to drive people nuts. But, you know, we do know that having either captions or subtitles or whatever, something people can read, like, they do actually read it, and that actually drives up engagement as well. So, but, you know, it's a lot of the same stuff that you have in any format. Just think about the space and time where somebody's going to see it, and really try to speak to that.
Yeah, I think about the point you just mentioned around, you know, where they're at in the funnel, like, all the things that, you know, we've all been taught over the years in marketing and growing, going through our careers, you know, where they're at, like, who are you targeting and what point of the funnel are they, you know, in the awareness, consideration, or trial? And I think it's interesting because I think, to your point, you mentioned it's like more upper funnel awareness, but I can also see it being, I could see it being multi-faceted, yeah, in terms of I could see it hitting all areas of the funnel. And that's the exciting part, to your point, is like, you're still at a really interesting point in the journey because you're still defining this, and it's going incredibly well. And you and I both know this is going to continue to go incredibly well for the next 5+ years, because, like, even when we think about how retail media has exploded, and to your point, 80%+ or so of that has been Amazon. But nonetheless, you know, going from, you know, close to $50 billion to over $100 billion, it's exciting, exciting what you all have done. And I'm excited to continue to watch it from the sidelines and support you all on. I guess one question I wanted to ask you too is, you know, what should a CPG brand, or maybe not a CPG brand, just what should a brand think about with regards to, hey, am I a potential fit for grocery TV's product? Any maybe best practices you've learned before we close out, or that you would recommend?
Yeah, I think everything starts with the audience, you know, and we have a ton of data that'll tell you why we think the grocery shopper is, you know, a great, you know, part of America to reach. You know, when you're in that buying mindset, you know, when you're typically the household decision maker, like, we think that we can provide that kind of audience, you know, in a way that's valuable for a lot of different brands. And so CPG is an obvious one that everyone thinks of when you think of the grocery store. If you want to reach people where your product is sold, like, we can provide that. And that could be top of funnel, like you're saying, where it's just pure brand building. It could be mid funnel, where it's more education, like showing how to actually use the product, or bottom of the funnel, where it's actually driving conversion. But yeah, if you're CPG, like, it kind of sells itself. What's, I think, surprising to some folks, though, is just how much business we do with the non-endemic folks. So, like, you know, any of the telecom, any of the financial, insurance, like, entertainment, like, we do a lot of business with those folks, and it's because of the audience. You know, they want to reach these people that are harder to reach these days with the decline of TV, and they want to do it in a way that's, you know, brand safe, that's got high engagement. And so if that's also something they're looking for as they kind of figure out what to do with their TV dollars or other budgets, like, we can be a really, really helpful partner in that front as well.
That's awesome. Well, Marlo, I wanted to thank you for joining this week's episode of the CPG View. You know, again, I mentioned our mission before, but also I think it's worth noting that, you know, we're really focused on educating, empowering, and encouraging the next generation of leaders. And I think of your product and the category you're building as just that, as a next generation type of capability that I think probably in five years or so, we're going to look back and say, wow, you know, remember when that was just beginning, and it's, you know, this massive thing now. But again, appreciate you joining this week's episode.
Yeah, thank you for having me on. I mean, it's been a long journey for me with this company and for the folks that work here. But I do feel like it's just the beginning. You know, we're in 4,000 stores, but there's 24,000 grocery stores in America. Like, we've got a ways to grow, and I'm excited about it, and I think we all are. And yeah, I mean, when you look at the market and the potential for it, like, there's just, I think, so much excitement ahead, especially for next year and the couple of years after that. So, yeah, thank you again, Don.
Of course.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of the CPG View, the number one CPG information source for global omnichannel leaders. Mm-hmm.